Hello again, and welcome to the International Soccer Preview by Soccerphiles Canada. I'm Kevin.
And I'm Connor.
Yeah, and I forgot in a podcast in the Group A one to publicly congratulate you on your child.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah,
Yeah.
a little girl, one more screaming voice to support Canada.
That's great. All right, should we begin here?
Yeah, so we are continuing with our group by group preview of Gold Cup 2021. And within that, our team by team overview. So, as always, with part one, we're going to begin with an overview of Group B, giving a brief introduction of the teams and countries, including looking at the location and size of each country.
That's right. And then part two is the longest part. We'll launch into a team by team overview. Looking at their long history, their recent history, their qualifying record for this cup, and then a brief overview of their players.
And then part three, we'll have a discussion of their prospects and our predictions, looking at the rankings, the head-to-head records, and again, our discussion on how we think each team will do.
All right. So please check out our preliminary podcast for this series. There we provided some overriding information in order to avoid too much repetition of kind of explaining things like the CONCACAF Championship and the UNCAF Cup, what those things are. We also have an introduction of ourselves on the podcast, a history of CONCACAF regional tournaments and the format changes over the years, and an intro to some of the relevant tournaments that CONCACAF is involved with. And finally, a discussion of FIFA and ELO rankings.
Right, and you can find us on the internet by searching Soccerphiles or Soccerphile Canada, and that's Soccerphiles with a PH. You can also search International Soccer Preview or podcast. We've already done a Euro Cup 2020 preview, as well as a preview of Copa America 2021. So this is our third series looking at the Gold Cup.
Right, and we've already done the preliminary podcast and Group A. So here we go with Group B. Do you want to introduce us a little bit, Connor?
Yeah, so the four teams in Group B, we'll begin with the United States. They are six times winners of the Gold Cup and are the second most successful team in the tournament behind Mexico. They last won the championship in 2017.
Right, I got to introduce Canada, and I should say at this point that I don't have a Canada jersey, Connor. I am so disappointed in myself.
Well, we have just a couple of days to fix that. I have my Canada scarf,
That's
which I
not
brought
bad.
with me.
Yeah, you're a little better than me. I do have this kind of optical illusion t-shirt with Canada colors, so I'm hoping it'll kind of baffle people into thinking I'm wearing a Canada jersey.
And that wall on your shirt represents Canada's stringent defense, no doubt.
Oh, of course, that's what I was thinking. Anyway, Canada have won the tournament twice, most recently in 2000. They've gone out at the quarterfinal stage in the last two Gold Cups.
Next is Martinique. They are competing in their third straight Gold Cup and seventh overall. They have only managed, though, to pass the group stage on one of those occasions.
All right, and finally, Haiti were winners of the CONCACAF Championship in 1973 when they hosted it. They reached the semifinals in 2019 for their best tournament finish in over 40 years.
That's right.
Great. Let's take a look at the countries one by one, starting with the USA.
Yeah, so the USA is the largest country in the CONCACAF region in terms of population, with 332 million people. That's third overall in the world, just behind China and India.
All right, how about Canada? How does Canada compare?
Right, their northern neighbors. Canada has 38 million people, so roughly a tenth of the population of the US. That's the 37th largest population among all countries. Though Canada with the largest area, largest geography of any team in of any country in North America.
Okay, so we have the two biggest in terms of size. How about Martinique?
Yeah, we shrink down quite a bit here. The island of Martinique, just over 1,000 square kilometers, and a population of just 375,000. That's 171st in the world out of about just over 200 countries.
Okay, and finally, Haiti.
Haiti, they split the island of Hispaniola with Dominican Republic. They have 11 million people, which is 81st largest country in the world overall. And they're the sixth most populous country in North America and the second most populous Caribbean country, just behind Cuba.
Right. Okay. Well, let's take a look at just all four of them together in comparison. And do you have any comments on that, Connor?
Yeah, so just in terms of size, we have the USA with 332 million people, Canada with about a tenth of that at 38 million, Haiti is third with 11 million people. And Martinique, really the minnows here at 375,000, so about a thousandth the population of the United States.
Right, great. Okay, well, now we move to our head-to-head, sorry, or not our head-to-head, our team-by-team look at the countries, and let's start with the USA. Do we have any nicknames for these guys?
Yeah, the nicknames that the US goes by most commonly are the Stars and Stripes. Or the Yanks. So are you familiar with either of those?
No, I mean, of course, I'm familiar with the terms, but not really. I don't really hear them being used much in discussion. How about you?
Yeah, not so much with the national team. Certainly, I don't think they go by either of those nicknames as much as some other countries.
Right. Okay, well, we're going to start with the long history, their tournament participation, and an overview of their major achievements. And we'll be following this format for all four teams. The USA has a much longer soccer history than or soccer tradition than most people would guess. Few people realize that they not only entered the first World Cup in 1930, but they took third place there. The only cup they failed to participate in was in 1938 when they withdrew. Actually, a lot of North American teams withdrew because FIFA decided to hold it in Europe for a second straight time, kind of breaking their promise to alternate between the Americas and Europe. Anyway, continuing on, ironically, their participation in the Regional Cup is not as good. They didn't enter the first four out of the first five editions, but they participated consistently from 1973. They've won the competition several times in recent years, but their first title was relatively late in 1991. And unlike most teams in the region, they don't have a kind of a local competition, but they have participated in the odd Confederation Cup and the Copa America. Let's take a look at those and just get them out of the way. Though they did miserably in their first Confederations Cup in 2003, they pulled two amazing results to finish second in the 2009 Confederations Cup. That's interesting to take a closer look at, but we won't do that here. They have failed to qualify since, losing a playoff against Mexico for the 2017 edition. This absence from the world stage is further evidence of a lack of recent form that we'll be talking about. They were also sometimes invited to play in the Copa America and have done so four times. They were knocked out in the group stage in 1993 and 2007. But they managed a fourth place finish in 1995 and again in 2016. So that's kind of an overview, and we'll get into some of the details, starting with the World Cup by Connor.
All right, thanks for that. So, looking at their World Cup, despite the impressive continuity in World Cup play, at least, their history is best described as two separate periods of ascendancy. The first was in the early years where they participated in the first World Cups and sometimes surprised. In addition to third place in 1930, they pulled off a shock win over England in the 1950 Cup, beating the 250-1 odds against them. So incredible.
Absolutely.
From 1954 to 1994, however, they failed to qualify for the World Cup, even at times when Mexico left the door open. Their second period of ascendancy started from 1994 and was motivated by their hosting of the World Cup that year. From that time, they have been almost on par with Mexico, and the two dominate the CONCACAF region. The USA have qualified for every World Cup from 1994 to 2014, although it is partly the strength of their region that makes it easy for them to get one of the 3.5 spots available, or perhaps lack of strength, I should say. It was therefore a shock when they failed to qualify in 2018, which I'll discuss a little bit more in a moment. The USA made a big impact in 2002, reaching the quarterfinals, and they have passed the group stage 4 out of the last 6 times. By 2014, they looked a world-class team capable of making an impact at the international level, but their failure in 2018 calls that into question.
All right, and I was actually there at that quarterfinal game in the 2002 World Cup. Me and your dad saw that game.
Right, in South Korea. Who were they playing against again?
No, it was Germany versus USA.
Right. Right, yeah, I remember that. More recently, though, at 2018, the USA finished 5th out of 6 in the hex with a record of just 3 wins, 3 draws, and 4 defeats. Despite a dreadful campaign, which included a humiliating 4-0 loss to Costa Rica, the USA only needed a point in their final match in Trinidad and Tobago, a team that had a 1-win, 0 draws, and 8 loss record up to that point, and in fact were fielding a B team with a number of young and untested players. However, incredibly, the USA lost the match 2-1, and therefore finished 5th and failed to make it even to the Intercontinental Playoff. So a huge setback for a team that, as we've described, was kind of on the ascendancy before that.
Wow, that was quite something. What a shock when I didn't watch those games, but when I saw the reports on those games, I couldn't believe Trinidad and Tobago did that.
Trinidad actually took a 2-0 lead in that game to halftime. The USA pulled one back, but could not manage the second goal that would have allowed them to get out of jail and qualify for the World Cup.
Right, and I don't think it was just that match, was it? I thought a few things came together to make that happen, other teams winning.
That's right. Both Panama and Honduras pulled out necessary wins. I think one of them even beat Mexico. So it was really just a series of unfortunate events for the U.S.
It
was within their control and within their power, and they really let it slip.
Yeah, but it must have been a huge shock nevertheless. Let's take a look at the history in the region. Actually, the same pattern reflects in regional soccer, though it began slightly earlier. Shockingly, they either didn't enter or didn't qualify for the regional final from 1963 all the way to 1981, and were knocked out in the group stage in their first successful qualification in 1985. However, from 1989, they dominated along with Mexico. They finished second in 1989 and won the inaugural Gold Cup in 1991. Since then, they've rarely failed to finish in the top two, their worst performance being in 2000 when they only reached the quarterfinal. I can't remember who won that tournament, Connor. Can you remind me?
That was Canada.
Oh, yeah, so it was. After a good period winning 3 out of 4 times from 2002 to 2007, they've kind of fallen off a little bit, losing to Mexico 5-0 in 2009 and 4-2 in 2011, and then a fourth place finish in 2015. This was punctuated with the title over Panama in 2013, though it was a tournament where a few teams sent their A team. They won again in 2017 and came second in 2019, losing to Mexico in the final. They didn't have to qualify for gold cups since 1991, unlike most other teams in the region. Whereas most teams qualified through more local zones, the Central American and Caribbean zones, Mexico, USA, and Canada had no local zone. Before 1991, the three of them made up kind of a North American zone. Strangely, Cuba was part of that zone for a while. And with only one qualifying for the... I'll begin again. Before 1991, the three of them made up kind of a North American zone, with only one of them qualifying for the CONCACAF Championship, and that was usually Mexico. But for some reason, they abandoned this idea with the start of the Gold Cup in 1991. Recently, however, the CONCACAF Nations League was formed, so they will have to qualify through that to reach the Gold Cup. Okay, and apologies to YouTube people. I was off on my graphics there, but I will get back on track. So there's no kind of a local group to discover. So we'll just, to discuss. So we'll just kind of summarize here. USA, in summary, is known for their grit. This was certainly evident in the early years, especially tenaciously clinging to that 1-0 win over England in the 1950 World Cup. They all but disappeared from the soccer scene after that, but came roaring back in about 1990 to rival Mexico as the top team in the region. They did rival them for 20 years, but have declined in the last decade. 2018 and the World Cup qualification failure that Connor described was something of a nadir, but at the end, they will probably qualify for every World Cup. They have some exciting talent coming in with players plying their trade at the top clubs in Europe, and they'll want to get back on track well in advance of the 2026 World Cup, which they primarily host. Let's turn our attention to recent history, and are you going to talk about the Nations League, Connor?
Yeah, so the USA, along with the other top six teams in the region, did not have to undergo the qualifying or placement round in 2018-19. That's due to their participation in the HEX, which qualifies them for the World Cup. So they were automatically given a spot in CONCACAF Nations League A and a spot in the 2019 Gold Cup. So in 2019-20, they won their League A group over Canada and Cuba, despite suffering a loss to Canada for the first time in 35 years. That took them to the Final Four, to the Final Four tournament, and they went on to beat Honduras in the semifinal and Mexico in the final in extra time to become the Nations League champions. They will thus remain in League A for the 2022/2023 season.
Right. So we don't get a really good look at them through that because they missed the placement campaign, but they looked fairly good in the 2019-20 season. We're getting our best look at most teams through World Cup qualifying. However, USA is one of the top, is it five teams?
Yeah, that's right.
One of the top five teams that didn't have to go through the first two rounds of qualifying. So a bit unfairly, the top five teams, according to FIFA rankings, received a bye to the final. I hope that doesn't continue, Connor.
Yeah, even though the U.S. and Mexico, too, would be expected to reach the final round, certainly 2018, where the U.S. failed to qualify, showed that anything is possible. So kind of automatically giving them a spot in the final round, as we've discussed, kind of seems to go against the principle of meritocracy that kind of defines World Cup qualification.
Right. Okay, well, at the risk of repeating our complaints about that, let us talk about the recent scorers or some of the players for the USA team.
Yeah, the U.S. does have several kind of regular top players missing for this tournament, especially overseas players. Players like Christian Pulisic, Giovanni Reyna, Weston McKennie, who are all with top clubs, and regulars like DeAndre Yedlin and Zach Steffen are all not part of this team. So the majority of their team this time is drawn from the MLS. Looking at some key players there, Giassi Zardes with Columbus Crew and Paul Areola with DC United. They're the main goals threat, or have, at least have some of the most goals among active squad members, as well as midfielder Sebastian Leggett with the LA Galaxy. Those would kind of be the players they were looking on for creativity and goals.
Right. I was surprised when I looked at the roster. Also, some of the new up-and-comers, and I'm not can't remember what their names are, but I've been hearing about them. They're also missing, and I was expecting them to be here. Do you know about any of those?
Yeah, not so much, but I was also surprised looking at the squad. I mean, some of the young players they have, like Giovanni Reyna with Dortmund and Weston McKennie with Juventus, you know, those would have been really exciting players to see, but it does seem like a lot of overseas players who ply their trade in Europe, and a lot of up-and-comers who are with European clubs do seem to be missing. So I'm sure that's an intentional strategy. Perhaps they want to rely on more local players, but it perhaps does deprive fans of seeing some of the top young talent in the U.S.
Yeah, and one other detail I've noticed is Brad Guzan back in net. I think he missed the 2019 Gold Cup. I actually thought he was retired.
Yeah, he's aging. Spent some time in England with Aston Villa, but he's still going strong in the MLS. He plays for Atlanta United. So, certainly a regular and steady pair of hands for them.
Yeah, and I guess 36 years old is not that old for a goalkeeper. Okay, shall we move on to Canada?
Let's do it.
All right. Any nicknames for Canada, Connor?
Yeah, they have a couple. The Maple Leafs, of course, is one, but probably more frequently you'd hear the Canucks, or in French Canada, you might hear Les Rouges, the Reds.
Kind of
different nicknames for English and French-speaking Canada.
Great. All right. Well, let's take a look at the tournament participation and major achievements. They're one of the oldest teams in the region, having first entered the World Cup in 1958. They did not enter in 1962 or 1966, but participated every time since 1970. They joined the CONCACAF regional competition long after its 1963 inception, waiting until 1973. So a bit laggard in joining world soccer there. They participated, though, consistently since then. Their only other involvement was as representatives of CONCACAF at the 2001 Confederations Cup, which they earned by winning the Gold Cup in 2000. However, they finished last in the group stage there, sadly.
Perhaps not a huge surprise, though.
Yeah, well, we're not hiding our bias for Canada, but we will kind of keep it under control.
That's right.
Let's take a look at their World Cup record.
So their major highlight in World Cup qualifying is reaching the finals in 1986. They didn't win or even score once they got there. But it was an admirable qualification, and they were, to be fair to Canada, I think, in one of the more difficult groups. They came somewhat close in 1994 by reaching a one-quarter intercontinental semi-playoff. They lost to Australia, but then would have had to beat Argentina beyond that, so they were never really a serious threat. However, it was still a good qualification run. Historically, they do reach the final round of qualification about half the time, but in recent years they struggled to do so, having failed since 1998.
All right, but they did make it in 2022, and we're all excited about that.
Indeed.
All right, let's take a look at their performance in the region. At the regional level, their highlight was winning the regional cup in 1985, which was a period of strength for them, and in 2000, the 2000 Gold Cup. So they are the only other team other than Mexico and the USA to have won it in the Gold Cup era. They also did well in 2002 and 2007, coming third, Passing the group stage is a measure of strength as they go through periods of failing to pass and periods of passing. Recently, they failed to pass for three cups in a row between 2011 and 2015, but a new and stronger crop of players emerged in 2017 and 2019, though they were stopped at the quarterfinal stage in both cases. Turning our attention to qualifying, they do not, as most do, have a qualifying tournament for the Gold Cup. Along with Mexico and USA, they're given automatic qualification. This seems particularly unfair in their case, given that they're not a known power in the region the way USA and Mexico are. But in fact, it's probably done them more harm than good to receive that automatic qualification, because they really lacked competitive play, and it gave them little preparation for Gold Cups and World Cup qualifying tournaments. So the creation of the CONCACAF Nations League solves this and has benefited them already. Its creation coincided with a strong squad, so they have impressed so far, including a win over the USA for the first time in, is it 38 years or 35 years?
I think it was 35.
Okay. And we're going to take a bit of a closer look at that a little bit later, that CONCACAF Nations League. But first, let's just summarize by saying it's only in the 1980s and the 2000 Gold Cup that they rivaled the top teams and made a realistic bid for the World Cup or for the top four in the Gold Cup. Otherwise, they struggle to pass the group stage or make the final round of the World Cup qualifying, with teams like Honduras and Panama proving stronger. A strong squad recently offers promise of another good period, and they've looked impressive against weak opposition in the region so far, and even against Haiti recently, but they have yet to be tested against the top teams. Let's take a look at that CONCACAF Nations League in their recent performances.
Yeah, so Canada was involved in the qualifying round in 2018-19, where there was a table of all teams in the CONCACAF region that were not involved in the Hex. They were given four matches against four different teams, and they performed impressively, winning all four of those to finish joint top. In fact, with an identical goal difference to Haiti, who were top. That placed them, that qualified them for the 2019 Gold Cup and also placed them in League A for the 2019-20 Nations League. And there they performed quite well. Despite a victory over the United States, as we mentioned, they came a narrow second, and Cuba was a distant last behind both teams. Canada and the U.S. both beat Cuba and then had a win and a loss against each other. So it was only goal difference that separated the top two teams, Canada and the U.S.
Yeah, we watched that game and it was very thrilling for us as Canadians.
Yeah, as we mentioned, Canada hasn't been, they've improved but haven't been tested against the top team. So for them, that was a real good test, and I think they'll draw a lot of confidence from that performance, beating the U.S. after such a long drought. And with more meaningful games to come, I believe that gives them hope that they can perform even with the elite teams in the region.
Oh, you're drawing me into a conversation, a discussion that we're supposed to have at the end of the podcast.
I'll save it there.
Let's take a look at the 2022 World Cup qualifying. Do you want to talk us through that, Connor?
Sure. So Canada's, the first round involved a five-team group, which Canada won easily. They won all four games, including some big away wins, 11-0 in Cayman Islands and 7-0 over Aruba. So four wins from four, 27 goals scored, one against, put them into round two. That was a head-to-head home and away against Haiti, and Canada won both matches, winning 1-0 and on the road, and then 3-0 at home. That home game, they were assisted, though, by a ghastly own goal from Haiti, which is quite recent, so you no doubt remember it well.
Well, I do, and I'm actually glad Canada won by more than 1-0 in that game because it was a backup keeper, and I felt sorry for him. I have a fondness for for Haiti.
Right, yeah, it was certainly an uncharacteristic error, but it probably gave Canada a bit of internet fame because I'm sure it made the rounds on the internet.
Yeah. Well, also in my recent memory is the quarterfinal win over Canada in the Gold Cup. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, so Canada and Haiti, who meet again here, met in the quarterfinals of the last Gold Cup. They were up 2-0 at halftime and seemed in complete control, dominant in fact, only for Haiti to stage a remarkable second half comeback and win the game 3-2. I'll have a look now at some of their Canada's players. Canada has a number of players playing overseas currently with top clubs, and in fact includes title winners in three different countries, with Alphonso Davies at Bayern Munich, Kyle Larin with Besiktas, and Jonathan David at Lille. So all quite impressive to be playing and competing at top teams, and will be involved in the Champions League next year. Jonathan David, who has an incredible 15 goals and 16 appearances for the national team, he's actually being rested for this tournament. But Lucas Cavallini, who himself has 16 goals and 22 appearances and plays with Vancouver in the MLS, he's a worthy replacement and will likely step in to fill his boots alongside with Kyle Larin, which demonstrates a surprising depth for Canada in the attacking positions.
Yes, I'm very disappointed that David is missing to you. Is that it? He's just being rested?
That's what I understand. He's being rested for the upcoming season with Lille.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's too bad. But nevertheless, as you say, we have a lot deeper pool to draw on than we've had in the past. I think in the past, missing a top player like that really would have really would cause some trouble for us, but they have a quite a few players coming up through the ranks.
Absolutely, and I think Canada's been assisted massively through the academies of Vancouver, Toronto, and Montreal in MLS, and as well as the new Canadian Premier League. Kind of like the US in 1994, they kind of developed their local league at that time, and that helped bring new players in and really saw a period of strength after that 1994 World Cup. Canada really didn't have any local league or local teams to bring in young Canadian players, but we have that now. Alphonso Davies made his debut with Vancouver at age just 15 years old. So I think it's giving Canadian players an opportunity, and it's no surprise in my mind that the emergence of young Canadian talent has coincided with the development of academies at professional Canadian clubs.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, actually, we should point out because we're from Edmonton that Alphonso Davies kind of grew up here. Do you know what age? I think he immigrated from Ghana.
He did as a refugee. I think he was only 5 years old or so. So he did spend his entire childhood in Edmonton.
Right. And as a just a personal note of interest, your sister was a student teacher and had him in her classroom, did he?
She
Did
did
she?
in Alphonso Davies' grade 7 year. So pretty neat. He said at the time he wanted to be a professional soccer player, which lots of 13-year-olds say. So I think my sister kind of blew it off, but here we are now, and he's got a Champions League under his belt. So.
That's right. Yeah, that's an incredible story, and we're big fans. We were watching the 2022 qualifications ones, especially the games against Haiti, kind of keeping our eye on David and Davies and a couple of others who are kind of becoming names, Mark Anthony Kay, I think. And but actually, we were kind of taken by surprise by some names that we didn't know. And I'm thinking of Buchanan And the guy who plays in Portugal, Eusta Coy, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name right, but were you surprised by some of the new names there?
I was very pleasantly surprised. I think it's David and Davies are making a name for themselves, but it shouldn't be overlooked that the supporting cast that Canada has is probably much stronger than it's been at any other time. And that gives these, not only these creative players an opportunity to kind of go out, express themselves, but it provides a solid basis for Canada. So yeah, there's other players emerging who are always going to be overshadowed by the stars. But I think the development of a strong supporting cast and even some depth is a huge positive for Canada.
Yeah, that's right. And one other thing that shouldn't be overlooked is that Junior Hoylett played for Cardiff.
Another Cardiff City players. Yes, he's without a club now, but I hope he finds one soon. He's been a very important part of the Canadian national team for several years now.
Yeah, we've always been a fan of Junior Hoylett. Anyway, we lingered on that possibly a bit too long, but we can't help it, can we, Connor?
Not at all. Go Canada, go.
We can shorten the time by talking about Martinique because they don't participate in World Cup play. But let's begin at the beginning by talking about their nicknames. Do they have one?
Yeah, the name I found was Les Matininos, which sounds kind of like the country name, but is used to refer to people from the island of Martinique. So just kind of a word to refer to Martinique inhabitants in general.
I see, not specifically the team.
That's right.
All right. Well, as I just said, Martinique doesn't compete in the World Cup. They do, however, compete in CONCACAF regional tournaments. They didn't start competing in the CONCACAF Championship era, but they started with the Gold Cup starting in 1991. They have reached the tournament six times, I guess seven with this one, but they've only passed the group stage once in 2002. They're part of the Caribbean zone and thus played in the Caribbean Cup and actually won that cup in 1993. Let's take a look at their, well, World Cup history, which is basically explaining why they're not in the World Cup.
Yeah, so Martinique is not a country unto itself, but is rather an overseas department or region of France. So this really can be likened to a province of France. And as such, they are part of the European Union and use euros as their currency. However, because they're not an independent country, they cannot be a member of FIFA and so do not compete in World Cup competition.
Right. And in the preliminary podcast, I suggested that maybe Guadeloupe and French Guiana, who are not in this cup, are the same. And I hate to put you on the spot, but I wonder if you know if it's the same with them.
They are. Yeah, both countries have the same status, really, and are really considered, for all intents and purposes, part of the French mainland. It covers a very wide geographic area. But like you said, the being like a province like any other in France is kind of the best analogy.
Great. Well, your political science degree came in handy there. Let's take a closer look at their CONCACAF regional performance. We've said they reached six Gold Cups in 1991. Two in a row in 2002 and 2003, and the last two in a row in 2017 and 2019. Their biggest success was reaching the quarterfinals in 2002, where they were narrowly defeated by Canada, who they face here, on penalties. Otherwise, they've been knocked out in the group stage. Qualification for them depended on the Caribbean Cup, where they also started participating in 1991. They've only failed to qualify four times for the Caribbean Cup and had a particularly successful period from 1992 to 94, placing in the top three, three times in a row and winning in 1993. Since then, they have scattered success, but equally as much failing to qualify. Their fourth place finish in 2012 was their first good campaign since 2001, but they have reached the finals since 2010, and they took fourth place in 2012 and in the last Caribbean Cup in 2017. And before we take a look at the CONCACAF Nations League stuff, I'll just kind of summarize that they've come in and out of form over their last over their 30-year history. Sometimes they seem sidelined or even forgotten because they don't compete in the World Cup, but they are at their best one of the stronger Caribbean teams and a reasonably strong CONCACAF member. After reaching the Gold Cups in 2000 and 2003, they kind of fell off the map, qualifying for only half the Caribbean Cups and getting knocked out in the group stage when they did. But they resurged in 2012, and as we saw, they've made the last two Gold Cups. So they are not a team to be forgotten. And I think they'll be in the thick of it a little bit more in the CONCACAF Nations League. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the Caribbean Cup is now defunct, and qualification for Gold Cup now goes through the CONCACAF Nations League. In the 2018-19 placement tournament, they won all four games and earned qualification for League A in the inaugural season of the Nations League, as well as the 2019 Gold Cup. Ironically, the other teams that had perfect records in that qualification round were Canada and Haiti, whom they meet here. The 2019-20 Nations League saw them hold their own in League A, bested by Honduras, who won the group, and twice tying Trinidad and Tobago to finish above them. This entitled them to both stay in League A and also qualified them for this Gold Cup.
Super, and let's take a quick look at their teams. I'm not sure I know that much about them. But a big name is Kevin Parsamon, but I see he's not there.
Yeah, a real surprise. He's Kevin Parsamon is their all-time leading goal scorer and actually among the top goal scorers in the Gold Cup among Caribbean players. He's only 33 years old, so I don't believe it's a retirement thing. And it does mean Martinique kind of brings in quite a fresh, relatively inexperienced team. Most of their players play in the domestic league in Martinique, though they do have a few players overseas, largely in lower leagues in France. So for Martinique, missing really the one big name will be a challenge for them. But you know, they've done well recently, and with kind of a mix of youth and inexperience, it'll be a test for them to see how they do.
Right. Well, I am familiar with some of those names from the last two Gold Cups. What I got to say, one's attention is kind of drawn to Kevin Parsamon when they play. So it'll be interesting to see how they do without him.
Yeah. An interesting thing on their players, too, is the number of connections they have to the French national team. Of course, players born in Martinique are eligible to play for France. And including, so some of their names over the years have included like the great Thierry Henry. He would have been eligible to play for Martinique. Of course, playing for France. Raphael Varane, I believe, is another one who's currently with the team. So they have, even though they don't compete in World Cups, they have had players or ties to players who have done really well for the French national team.
Right. I believe the rule is that if they've retired for 5 years, they can join. And I know one player did that a few years ago. Do you remember anything about that?
Yeah, because they are not a FIFA member, their eligibility rules are a little bit laxer. So I'm not sure if the 5 years thing applies. It may, but it does allow players who perhaps have a couple caps for France to join Martinique.
Right, we'll try to get some more information on that, because as I recall, I don't think it was Martinique, but maybe Guadeloupe had a French international, a very famous one who was retired and then joined, and then they played some qualification games with him, which seemed to be okay, and then they played in the Gold Cup with him, and they forfeited the game because they did that.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm sure it's a bit of a murky realm, which perhaps not even understood well by some of these teams themselves.
Yeah, or maybe by CONCACAF itself. I wish I had the clear details on that story, but I'm sure it'll come up at some point in our podcast. Meanwhile, let's move on to the final team that just made it in a couple of days ago, Haiti.
Right. Haiti go by the nickname Le Rouge et Bleu, the Red and Blues, or else Le Grenadiers. I'm not quite sure the history of that, but the Red and Blue make sense based on their flag.
I was doing a little history walk around when I visited Haiti, and they were... The historian was really bent on pointing out that the Haitian soldiers had defeated Napoleon, which actually ended up causing great problems for Napoleon. It was a very interesting history. I wonder if that nickname had something to do with that.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
Anyway, but back to soccer history, they're among the oldest teams in the region, having first entered World Cup qualification in 1934. Thus, they were founding members of CONCACAF and joined the regional tournament in 1963, and of course were there for the first Caribbean Cup in 1989. Their participation has been a bit inconsistent, however. After 1934, they entered only one World Cup in 1954 until 1970. After that, they participated consistently, except for 1990, when they didn't enter. In Gold Cups and Caribbean Cups, however, they withdrew from most tournaments between 1989 and 1998, a 10-year period. But they've entered consistently since, even through a devastating earthquake in 2010, which cost the lives of a quarter of their football association staff.
Wow, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at their World Cup history.
Right, so Haiti participated in the 1934 World Cup, and which is an accolade that few CONCACAF teams can boast. They were knocked out there in a preliminary regional qualification set consisting of three games with Cuba. They've had little to boast of beyond that other than a strong period in the early 70s. They came within minutes of reaching the Cup in 1970, losing a final playoff to El Salvador in extra time. They did, however, reach the World Cup in the following edition of 1974, and they came quite close again in 1978. Their finest period in world football. In the World Cup itself, they were knocked out in the first round, losing all games, but scoring a goal each against Italy and Argentina. They have never come close again. They reached the final round in 1982, but never again after that. Their best performance since was reaching round 4 or 5 in 2018.
Okay. And I think they've done a bit better in the region. Their golden period in the 1970s extends to the Regional Cup, as we talked about in the first section. In fact, the two were intricately connected since the CONCACAF Championship was the qualification tournament for the World Cup. Thus, their regional title in 1973 was what earned them a spot in the 1974 World Cup. And their two second-place finishes in the edition surrounding that accounts for their close calls that Connor just described. Even though the two became separated with the advent of the Gold Cup, I mean the fact that CONCACAF qualification, CONCACAF Championship was qualification for the World Cup, they follow the same pattern of never coming close to the achievement of the 1970s. They had some success in the Gold Cup competition, though. They reached the Cup more than half the time from 2000 onwards, and they passed the group stage in 2002. They didn't pass the group stage again until 2009, but they have done so half the time since. In 2019, they bettered that one step by reaching the semi-final at the expense of Canada. Okay, Even though the Caribbean Cup was a qualifier for the Gold Cup until 2017, the results actually didn't run parallel, other than the poor performances resulting in their failure to reach the Gold Cup. So, for example, their strongest period in the Caribbean Cup was around the turn of the century, where they thrice finished in the top three, but that was an unremarkable period in the Gold Cup. They also won the Caribbean Cup, their only title, in 2007, but they were not noticeably strong in the Gold Cup in that period. And I think, Connor, moving on from the Caribbean Cup, we should go directly to the CONCACAF Nations League and maybe summarize after that.
Sure. So qualification moved from the Caribbean Cup to the Nations League in 2019, and Haiti started well. Coming first out of all 34 teams in the placement round in 2018-19, winning all four of their games. That gave them passage to the 2019 Gold Cup, where they reached the semifinals, as we've noted, and also placed them in League A. However, despite tying Costa Rica twice in the 2019-20 Nations League season, they were relegated from League A to League B, a consequence of being bested by Curaçao.
That's right. And so the League A teams that were relegated weren't given passage to the Gold Cup. Instead, they were given passage to a playoff among the second place in League B and the winners of League C.
That's correct. So there were 12 teams in the playoffs, three teams advanced. So there were kind of two or three sets of four. Involving a semifinal and final. So Haiti won their semifinal 6-1 against St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and then beat Bermuda in the final 4-1. So they really didn't have too much trouble in qualifying through the playoff.
No, they didn't. The other two teams who reached it went to a long penalty shootout, but Haiti had a relatively easy trip there. Okay, so in summary then, Haiti's a pretty inconsistent team. Apart from the 1970s, their periods of strength don't really show a pattern and do not track from the major tournaments. In other words, doing well in one doesn't necessarily correlate with doing well in the other tournaments around the same time. And it's actually the same at the game level, where in any given game, they can challenge the best or drop points to the worst. They've taken points off all the strong teams, beating Costa Rica and Canada in 2019 alone, as well as taking Mexico to extra time in the semifinal there. But they also drop points to weaker teams like St. Lucia, Suriname, and Guyana. They do seem a bit stronger in recent times, although their 2022 World Cup qualification brings that into question. And we're going to immediately take a look at that 2022 World Cup qualification. Do you want to talk us through that?
Sure. So the first round, they were placed in a group with four other teams. However, St. Lucia, one of the teams, withdrew. So they ended up having a group of four. And Haiti won all three of their games, beating Belize, Turks and Caicos Islands by a score of 10-0, and also Nicaragua. So some decent Central American teams in there. However, once they got to the playoff, they met Canada. And as we've described, Canada beat them 4-0 on aggregate. So Haiti failed to advance to the octagon, and their World Cup 2022 journey is over.
Yeah. Well, I do like Haiti, but not quite enough that I would want them to win over Canada. Let's take a look at their players next, and you have a few things to say about that.
Yeah, Haiti's an interesting team, as they have players playing with clubs scattered around the world. They do have some playing domestically in Haiti, but they also have players playing in Cyprus, Kazakhstan, Romania, Ecuador, Denmark, and the USA. So really all over the world. Their top player is undoubtedly Dukins Nazon. The 27-year-old has scored 23 goals in 44 appearances, so that's a goal every other game. And he plays for a team called Saint-Truiden in the Belgian top flight. Another player who scored 3 goals for them in 2022 World Cup qualifying was Francis Perrault. He has 10 goals in 17 appearances and plays in the second tier in France.
Right. I know from watching them that they can be like very fast on the attack and can be kind of overwhelming when they play like that. One player I notice who's missing is their long-term goalkeeper, and I can't remember his name, but it's got Johnny in it. And I remember talking at the Edmonton Heritage Festival. I went to the Haiti tent and talked to some of the Haitians about their team, and they were a huge fan of this goalkeeper. And I'm actually surprised not to see him there. Do you know who I mean, or I don't mean to put you on the spot there?
Yeah, I don't remember the name, but yeah, he's been around. Johnny Placide.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, popular figure. He missed the final World Cup qualifying match against Canada, so I'm not quite sure what the situation is, but he's been one of their more consistent figures among the national team.
Yeah, I mean, he plays in France as a few of them do, and we saw that terrible mistake by the goalie. I hope that they come up with a replacement for Johnny Placide, because the goalkeeper who lost in the 3-0 loss to Canada looked very new and kind of weak.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the team-by-team discussion. And now we are going to move on to part 3 of the podcast, where we start thinking about the prospects of each team and maybe comparing their relative strengths. So we're going to start with the rankings, and are you going to take us through that, right, Connor?
Yes, I will.
Yeah.
So the USA are currently 20th according to FIFA and 23rd in ELO rankings. Their highest recent ranking was in June 2014, when they reached 13th in both. However, they fell to 30th and 34th following their failure to reach the 2018 World Cup. The USA's highest ever ranking was 5th in the world in FIFA, heading into the 2006 World Cup, though that was actually one of their poor performances as they finished last in their group. In recent years, the USA seems to have settled just outside the top 20 in FIFA and around 30th in ELO.
Yeah, I noticed that recently they've moved from 35th to 23rd in the ELO rankings, but I'm not really sure what they've done in the last half a year to merit that. Do you?
I guess they did beat the USA in the final of the Nations League tournament.
Oh, Mexico, you mean? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that probably would have given them a bit of a boost.
Yeah, I'm not sure it merits a 12-point boost. It kind of does reflect like the strongest team the strongest teams in CONCACAF on the world stage are fairly average teams, and I don't think we've really mentioned that, but it'll be interesting to have Qatar in this tournament to see how they compare with teams outside of the region, because I think it's hard to kind of put a finger on them within the region, because they can look stronger than they really are.
Yeah, agreed. Both Mexico and USA have done well in Copa America, but that's not always reflected in other tournaments, such as the Confederations Cup or World Cups.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, we won't linger too much and move on to Canada's ranking.
Right, so Canada is 70th in FIFA rankings, and they're much higher in ELO. They're 42nd. That's kind of an unusual level of disparity. It places Canada as the 7th ranked team in CONCACAF according to FIFA, but the 3rd ranked team in ELO. So it's a Like I said, the two systems view Canada slightly differently. Canada was as low as 117th in FIFA in December 2016 and 78th in ELO, so still higher according to that system. Canada, in fact, at their highest ever ELO ranking and at their highest ranking in FIFA since December 2012 when they were 64th. It's looking at Canada over the years, it's fair to say that there's been a lot of movement both up and down over the years, but they are on an upswing now, coinciding with kind of a younger generation of exciting players.
It is a bit odd because usually teams will be higher in the FIFA rankings than they are in the ELO one. So I wonder what there is in the ELO system that's giving them a boost here. It's generally a longer-term view.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not sure what it is, but it does call into question kind of some of the over-reliance on FIFA rankings in World Cup qualifying. So, you know, FIFA views Canada as a seventh-best team or outside kind of the top six, whereas ELO places them third. So we've talked a little bit about the reliance on FIFA rankings to kind of place teams into the final round of qualifying. And when you get this sort of disparity, I think it just kind of emphasizes that the rankings can be kind of unreliable, or at least it can kind of be a little bit all over the place.
Yeah, I think we can't hide a bit of cynicism towards the FIFA rankings, but you're dead right. I mean, here in the last couple of years, they've beaten the USA. They've done very well in the CONCACAF Nations League. They've reached the final round of the World Cup, and for all that, they've moved up three places in FIFA, whereas they've moved up 16 places in the ELO ranking. So once again, for me, the ELO seems a bit more accurate.
Yeah, we've discussed it previously, but we do find the ELO rankings to be a bit more reflective overall of the of a team's general strength.
Yeah. Anyway, the upcoming competitions will help us to nail that down and see where they really do stand in the region, at least. How about Martinique? I know they don't have a FIFA ranking, but we can only look at the ELO ranking.
Yeah, as they're not a FIFA member, they are not ranked by FIFA. In ELO, they are 98th. They've been at 100 or just above 100 ever since December 2014, and that follows a decade where they were just below 100, kind of in the 100 to 120 mark. So they've been fairly consistent over the years. And recently, their slightly higher ranking kind of reflects their regular appearances at the Gold Cups.
Right. Once again, especially for them, the Gold Cup is defining because they don't participate in any World Cup stuff. Let's go to Haiti next.
Haiti are 83rd, according to FIFA, and 74th in ELO. Compared to 2 years ago, this is a rise in FIFA from 101st, but it's actually a fall in ELO from 65th. So they moved in opposite directions in the ranking systems. In December 2012, Haiti were 39th in FIFA, which was their highest ever ranking, but 96th in ELO. So that's a disparity of 57 places between the two ranking systems. So it's a little bit hard to place them on these rankings because, like I said, they're even moving in different directions, but generally, they're in the 70 to 100 mark in FIFA and 80 to 110 mark in ELO, so slightly lower.
Right. Well, that may be kind of a reflection of their inconsistency that I spoke about in the summary, because they really can tackle some top teams and then sometimes drop points needlessly. Okay, let's go on. Do you want to summarize there? Because this basically acts like our odds for the tournament.
Yeah, so the USA is the second strongest team in the region, behind Mexico, who has a better record in Gold Cups than the USA. Canada, again, is seventh in FIFA, but the third strongest in the region. Haiti is next. They're 10th strongest according to FIFA and 8th strongest according to ELO. And Martinique are the 11th strongest CONCACAF team, according to the ELO ranking. So all four teams in the top 11 means this is a relatively strong group in the Gold Cup.
It certainly is. And, you know, the fact that Haiti is the pot four team, but they're stronger than the pot three team, makes it a bit interesting. In most tournaments, the pot four team will be a really feeble team. But Haiti is anything but that.
All right. Oh. Do you want to look at the head-to-head records?
You betcha. Okay, well, yeah, the USA and Canada, as we've said, Canada recently beat the USA, but that was their first win in 38 years, and I don't seem to have it here in my record, I guess, because it was fairly recent. But USA have had the better of them ever since the turn of the century. However, it's kind of interesting to note that Canada had the better of the USA when the USA were kind of a non-entity from about 1950 to 90, and Canada had a much better record than them then. But the more significant one is the recent record, and we see that the Gold Cup 2002, USA won on penalties there. 2005, 2007, and 2011, the USA won all the time, twice beating them in the semifinals. So, you know, as biased Canadian fans, we're hoping that record will turn around. USA and Martinique have only met twice, and USA won both games. USA has a better record over Haiti in that good period for Haiti around 1974. Haiti did beat them twice, but otherwise have lost to them, most recently in the 2015 Gold Cup group stage, where the USA won. Canada has a better record than Martinique, and they have played recently. They played in 2019, and Canada won 4-0. So that is a good record to go in with. They'll be feeling confident having beaten Martinique by that margin. And maybe the most interesting pairing of all is Canada versus Haiti, because of their recent record. Actually, over the years, Canada have beaten them fairly consistently. They tied in their early meetings in 1977 and 81, but from 1985, Canada won every game with them, except for that 2019 Gold Cup quarterfinal where we noted. But even in that case, Canada was dominant in the first half. Dominant in the first half, and Haiti made a great comeback to win. So we also saw in 2022 World Cup qualifying that Canada handled them fairly easily, I would say. So we'll see if that holds up in this cup. And finally, Haiti and Martinique. Haiti has won 5 games, tied none, and lost 3. But again, those losses were kind of earlier on, and in recent times, Haiti have won most of their games. So there we have it, Connor.
Great summary. Let's get into a discussion on each team's prospects, first at the group stage level.
You betcha. So I was a bit surprised when I looked at the USA's roster. You know, missing some of their big players, I actually think, opens the door a little bit for Canada. How about you? Do you think Canada has a chance against the USA?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, with the exception of Jonathan David, they're really bringing their strongest team in. And I think for Canada, they want to get these players playing together as much as possible in preparation for the Octagon, and to really make a push for qualifying for the 2022 World Cup. So I think Canada will take this tournament very, very seriously. Not to suggest the USA aren't, but they're obviously using it to kind of bring in and test out some new players, as opposed to relying on really some of the top talent that we'd expect them to bring to the Octagon later on this year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to kind of get too enthusiastic about Canada because I think in general they're still a ways behind the USA. But honestly, if they could take first place over USA, I think that would give them an easier route going forward and possibly a route to the final.
Yeah, I agree. I do see a draw between Canada and the USA as certainly possible. Though, again, that would be considered a bit of an upset. It could come down to goal difference then. You probably favor the USA just with some of the attacking players they have. But I do think Canada, again, will be motivated, and it's not out of the question that they give the USA a run for their money here.
That's right. Well, regardless, I think both the USA and Canada will pass the group stage. However, the difference between them may come down to Martinique and Haiti, who are certainly capable of pulling an upset. And I actually think Canada's record over these two teams is a little bit better.
They have lost to both teams in recent memory in the Gold Cup, Haiti in 2019 and Martinique in a group stage game in 2013. But Canada seems to have put that right with convincing wins over both these teams in their most recent meetings. I don't see Martinique or Haiti really challenging Canada or the USA, certainly to get out of the group, but it is possible that at their best, they can take a point off and kind of shake things up, especially if perhaps Canada or the USA takes them a bit lightly. Between Haiti and Martinique, I think it could be close. I probably give the odds to Haiti, even though they're the pot four team. They're a bit unpredictable, but I do think that they're a bit of a stronger team overall, and for Martinique, I think losing Kevin Parsemain or not having him in the lineup is a detriment to them. So I would favor Haiti above Martinique. But what about you?
I totally agree with what you say about overconfidence, and I'm a bit worried about that with Canada because I think that's what cost them against Haiti in the quarterfinal of the last tournament. Maybe that will be a bit of a sobering experience for them so that they won't take it for granted. I also think USA was maybe a bit overconfident when Canada beat them, or at least unprepared. But they too, in turn, will be a bit more wary of Canada having lost a game to them. I think, yeah, the prospect of an upset is possible, but I wouldn't say it's likely. And I definitely think Haiti is a lot stronger than Martinique. In fact, I'm not even sure that Canada met Haiti, met the best players, the best of Haiti in that gold. In that 2022 World Cup qualification, I'm kind of feeling like a couple of their better players were missing and they weren't at their best. But I think Haiti is definitely stronger than Martinique. And as you said, with Kevin Persimmon missing, that's got to be a blow to Martinique. Okay, but that's enough chatter. Give it to me straight, Connor. How is this group going to turn out?
Despite the possibility of upsets, I'm going to go kind of conventional and say USA first, Canada second, both comfortable, followed by Haiti and Martinique last. Do you agree?
No, I do not. I have admitted to my bias here, and even if it's more in hope than in cold logic, I will take Canada to win the group. And actually, my cold logic for that is the USA roster. I don't think they've sent their best here, and so I'm going to take Canada to pip USA in second, and Haiti definitely in third over Martinique.
All right. Well, hopefully you're right. We'll be cheering hard for Canada. What do you see about any of these teams' prospects in the tournament overall?
Well, that's a good question. I think USA, even if their team is more of an experimental team, as you said, would be definitely disappointed not to reach even the final or at least the semi-final. And I think Canada, in its current form and the excitement about them, will be hoping to reach the semi-final. I don't think that is premature or unrealistic, because they should have reached the semi-final last time. If Martinique or Haiti get past the group stage, I'm pretty sure they would fall at the next hurdle. Again, though, they're capable of surprising, as Haiti did in the last Gold Cup, taking Mexico to penalties in the semi-final. How about you?
Yeah, really impressive, but I don't see a repeat there. I don't really see these teams getting out of the group. That's Martinique or Haiti. And if they do, I think their tournament would end at the quarterfinal stage. For Canada, I think semifinals would be satisfactory. They made it to the quarterfinals last time. So getting to the semifinals would represent progress. I think for Canada, they would probably would fancy themselves against perhaps even a Costa Rica or Honduras. But if they met USA or Mexico in the later rounds, that's probably where their tournament would end. So it might depend when or how soon they meet either of those teams again. And for USA, I agree, anything less than the final would be a disappointment. Interestingly, in their six victories in the Gold Cup, they've only beaten Mexico in the final once. Five of their victories have come against other teams, such as Jamaica and Panama. Whereas when they meet Mexico, they tend to lose to them. So I think for the USA, I think if they met Mexico in the final, I would favor Mexico, particularly with this U.S. squad. However, if Mexico faltered down the line, that would open up the door to the U.S.
That's a really good observation. I think that's one that you could actually put a soccer ball in your belly and run around the room celebrating. having noted that, but anyway, yeah, I'm not sure where to go. Do you want to sign us out?
I think that's it. I think that's a good look at where we expect the teams to do and what we think would be realistic for them. It'd be an exciting group. Canada USA, of course, is a game which will have a lot of interest on both sides of the border, but particularly in Canada. And we'll be cheering for them hard and look forward to the games.
Yes, and thanks very much for joining on the podcast, Connor. Great talking to you about this.
My pleasure as always. I'll see you next time.
You betcha. And we will see you viewers or listeners for the Group C podcast in the next episode. Bye.
Bye.